Welcome into another edition of Let's Talk Wheels. Matt Peralta, Mike Herzing. Eileen Falkenberg-Hull is not going to be joining us this week. She is off for the week. But Mr. Herzing, it's just the two of us. It's old school for Let's Talk Wheels.
It's old school, buddy. It's great. I mean, we miss Eileen, but you know what? She'll be back, and she's doing a big project. We got a big website that's getting ready to be launched that we're going to be actually part of. And that's going to be exciting. I don't know if we can tell everybody yet, but it's going to happen soon.
No, I don't think we want to let the cat out of the bag just yet on that, but it's something that's going to be fun. In particular, if you're in Texas, it's going to be fun for you guys. You're going to enjoy what we're going to be doing in a very short period of time. I mean, we're close here.
Yeah, next couple of weeks, it's going to be great. I mean, I've got a couple of great interviews today. We got all kinds of stuff for folks, and we got some news from RAM, right?
Yeah, well, tell everybody about the interviews that you just did.
Well, I talked to a Texas state trooper. Richard Standifert, nice guy, and he talked about some of the hurricane evacuations. You know, hurricane time. You guys don't have to deal with that too much in Vegas, but boy, all the coastal states and things, it's tough. After all that stuff that went on the East Coast, I just thought we'd just kind of bring them back and just talk a little bit about it and some of the other things, the extra things that the state troopers do that people may not realize. And that's pretty much nationwide. We've got that. And then we've got an event here in Texas, and a lot of people are going to come in from across the nation called the Luxury Supercar Showcase. I'm just going to say that. It includes McLaren and Porsche and Jaguar and a couple other things. So we'll just go into that. Got the lady from the Park Place dealerships, Carolyn Alvey. She was very interesting. So we got a lot of good stuff today.
All right, very cool. So we got those coming up here on the program for this coming week. As you guys know, Jeep and Ram are our two big sponsors here, and both Jeep and Ram are doing incredible things. FCA is just absolutely crushing it.
Yeah.
And there's two really cool stories here on News and Notes segment that we want to start the show with. And one is the 2020 Ram 1500 became the first full-size truck to nab the top safety pick plus. The only other pickup truck that came close to earning this distinction was the Honda Ridgeline for this. And, you know, Ram, this is really, really cool. So this is from the IIHS, which is the insurance industry funded site. But for a truck to get this, to come away with a good rating in all six crashworthiness tests, I mean, Mike, this is a big deal, is it not?
It is. It's a great big deal. And, you know, and the other thing is people talk about crashworthiness and all that other stuff, and that's all great. But trucks, they always kind of ignored that. It was like a work vehicle. And in the last few years, they've gotten more and more serious about it, and Ram just took it to a whole different level.
It's very cool to see this, to be a top safety pick plus, to get the good rating. You know, as this article talks about, it's no small task to get this. And, you know, this is something where you have to talk about your ability to protect the person riding in the vehicle. And, you know, the Ram interior is so luxurious and so nice, but to have that extra little check mark next to the safety, if you got your family, you're using it for an everyday vehicle as well as a work truck. It's extra peace of mind, right?
People have no idea what goes into this. I mean, for example, I remember talking to a Ford guy about an Explorer. This was several years ago, like in about 10 or 12 years ago before the last generation. And I said, why do you put the door handle here? It's kind of awkward, because he goes, because if we put it 2 inches up, it'll, and in a crash, it hits your kidney and we lose this rating and it hurts you. He says, we moved it down for a reason. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, everything is all built for a reason, every single bit of this vehicle. And that's how it is with Ram. They'll crash it and they'll do this and they'll do that and they go, okay, that might hurt somebody here. That might do this. That's going to do. And I can't imagine they smash a bunch of these things just to make sure that nobody gets hurt. But it's endless work, and to have this rewarded with this type of a certification, that's great.
So this is important to you, because you mentioned the differences. I think it does matter to point this out, that we're talking about the 2020 Ram 1500 crew cab model with the active safety equipment included and the optional LED headlights. So if this is something that you feel like is very important to you, that you want to have the 2020 Ram 1500 that's got the superior mark when it comes to the technology, you know, that's where you want to go and try to find a dealership or build the truck at a dealership that actually fits that, with the active safety equipment plus the optional LED headlights are the two things that will give it this IIHS stamp of approval, if you will, as the first truck to be able to do so. And, Mike, you and I were talking offline a little bit about Ram trucks and how, for a long time, the Ram truck, I don't want to say it was ignored, but it wasn't on the radar screen for, say, GMC.
And it was Ford and GMC and Chevrolet, and that was it. And then all of a sudden, they came out in, what, 94, 95 with the new design, and then they started, and it just went crazy. And then when FCA bought Chrysler in 2008, by 11, they had Ryan Nagode and some other guys that are doing the interiors, Ralph Giles on the outside. They all of a sudden, their design was gorgeous. I remember when Sergio came in, Marchionne, and he says, I'm going to run this company because here's what we're going to do. We're going to build a truck with the nicest interior on the market. He says, that's what people want nowadays. And believe it or not, he was right. People want, because around a lot of times now, when you get 20 miles to the gallon or 21, 22 miles to the gallon, you can drive that as a family car. Okay. And that's all great because it is your family car if you're in Texas and or Nevada and some parts of California, inland California, and things like that. And a lot of states have people, like I said, driving for cars. But now they're safe as a car, if not safer. I mean, I always talk about a little car is great. And they're very safe. You see these crash dummies are they're hitting the wall and the offset crash and things like that. But if you're behind an F-150 and a Suburban runs in the back of you and you're the little car in the middle, it's physics.
Right.
Somebody's going to get hurt. Would I rather be in a pickup truck or would I rather be in a little car? Now, some of these little cars get 24 miles a gallon, 25 little SUVs, but I can get 22 and I can drive a truck and it's plenty of iron around me. And I can do more with it. It's more versatile. I can carry stuff. I can tow trailers. I can do all those things. It's just the best of both worlds or all worlds. But, you know, another thing about this, now, the fact that Ram has gotten this now, that means that puts the pointer toward Ford and GMC and Toyota and Nissan and Chevrolet going, hey, guys, why can't you do as good as we do?
Mm-hmm.
All right? So that's just going to make everybody better. Oh, the phone's ringing. Oh, boy. But make everybody better in this whole industry. So I think it's just really great to step it up a notch.
Yeah, I totally agree. It raises the bar. It makes everyone compete. It's something that now I'm sure we're going to see advertisements done off this from Ram saying, look, you know, this has been given the first truck ever to be awarded this get this award.
I know.
It's very, very cool. But
people are going to look for this. I mean, nobody makes a bad truck. Everybody makes a really good truck. There's no company. Some companies have better fuel economy than others. Some have more comfort. It's kind of be what you want. But Ram has just seemed to make people happy all the way around this year, the last couple of years.
So there's the Ram news. The Gladiator news, as I mentioned, Jeep and Ram and FCA, the great sponsors for us here on Let's Talk Wheels. So Gladiator buyers are spending, on average, $1,000 to accessorize their truck. This is now the average Wrangler buyer spends approximately $800 customizing their Wrangler, their Jeep Wrangler. The Gladiator now goes $200 more to accessorize their truck. Mike, you've said this for years. Nobody buys a stock Wrangler. No. Well, it sounds like no one's buying a stock Gladiator either.
Well, you're right. A Wrangler, I mean, a Jeep is like a Harley. You know, Harley Davidson. You never see a stock one. Yeah, I mean, I'm driving a Gladiator this week, and I drove one the week before. I've got the lower sport version right now. Last week, I had the Overland. And I'm in love with it. But you know what's funny is? I like the cheaper one better than the more expensive one.
Wow.
I'm weird, I guess, but of course, no denying that. But it's been really, really nice.
You know, Mopar, this is something you've talked about a lot with the Mopar parts. That it doesn't negate the warranty if you buy it through the dealership. In terms of having a new vehicle, do you feel like Wrangler buyers are more inclined with a new truck to say, look, I'm not going to mess around with the secondary market. I'm going to make sure I'm buying this straight from the dealer?
Well, sure. But, I mean, also, a few years ago, Mopar didn't have all the accessories they have now. But also, don't forget, you buy a Rubicon, it's already got a lift. It's already got the big wheels and tires. It's already got the skid plates. It's already got all the stuff. The switch is already there to mount the fog lights and the winch and everything. All the wiring is there for your winch. You've got an auxiliary switch inside. All you got to do is bolt the winch on and you're done. It's so cool. And the neat thing about using Mopar accessories is you can A, put it on the note if you're going to finance it, and B, it's covered under full factory warranty.
Yeah, and look, this article that I'm reading is interesting because it is teasing what Mopar's going to do at SEMA coming up here in Las Vegas very soon. They've got some really unique stuff coming out for the Gladiator in 2020 and in the future, which could be really interesting. And then you've got, in the Moab, Utah, the Easter Jeep Safari that's going to be coming up as well. They're looking to really showcase the Gladiator and to have it go out in the desert and really do some cool things with it. So it really is interesting because you're talking about the average buy for a Gladiator is $56,000. So, you know, you're talking about the base model, which is $33,000, and you're going all the way up to $56,000, plus then after you go aftermarket, you're adding another $1,000 on top of it. This is a pretty impressive moneymaker for Jeep, is it not?
Yeah, it is, but it's also a great vehicle, but you've got to want a truck. We'll talk about that when I do my review. But by the way, I think we've got Eileen Falkenberg-Holt on the line right now. Eileen,
well,
you there?
Somewhat of a surprise.
I am. Yeah.
She snuck in.
I'm right here in Louisville. I'm about to catch a flight, but I wanted to make sure I check in with you guys real quick.
Yeah, she's like a female ninja right here. So.
Where are you, Eileen? That's a better question.
I am in Louisville, Kentucky at their beautiful, clean, and modern airport.
So can you say why you were in Louisville, Kentucky?
Yeah, so I'm here for the 2020 Ford Escape launch. They're launching three brand new power plants, and it's an exciting time. I'll be able to tell you guys about it next week.
So you're under embargo for a little while, but was the trip fun?
Oh, of course it was fun. It's Louisville. It's a great little town, a little hot for me right now. But, looking forward to tell you guys about it and tell you about all the places I went in the new Ford Escape.
Were you playing poker, or are they just playing poker for you?
We were doing a little bit of faux betting to celebrate Churchill Downs and kind of the history
of course.
Racing and horse betting. Yeah, of course, some Ford themed fun out here in our off time after we got done driving for the day yesterday.
Yeah,
so I'm
I was jealous. I saw on your Instagram. I was jealous. I was like, okay, now we're talking my neck of the woods here. We're playing little games, little card games, little chips. I was impressed. I liked what I saw out of that. And one day Kentucky will legalize sports gambling, and they'll legalize Churchill Downs and Twin Spires and all the other fun stuff that they got going on down there in Kentucky with Louisville. Very cool. So let me ask you this. We just talked about this, Eileen, a little bit about the average buyer is spending more money in the aftermarket, $1,000 after they buy their Gladiator, than the average Wrangler buyer, who's spending about $800 on aftermarket parts to equip their Wrangler. Any surprise for you on that?
I am not surprised, and the reason I'm not surprised is because we've been waiting so long for the Gladiator, and consumers are finally getting the opportunity to get their Jeep truck, to get it exactly like they want. They've probably been saving up a little bit for it. They've been in anticipation for years, so they're spending a little bit more because they want it a little bit more. They're salivating over the fact that they can now customize their Jeep truck.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a supermodel to everybody. They've been dreaming about this forever. It's just here, and they can't keep him on the showroom floor.
Mm. It doesn't surprise me. It's a great truck to drive, and it's beautiful in terms of a Jeep truck. And, it's a lot of fun to outfit. There's some really good-looking Gladiators out there.
Yeah, and it's funny. Whenever you're driving down the road, people kind of do a double take and go, what's that?
I'm in one right now. So.
Do you have the doors off?
No. I'm not going to do that.
That, I think, still is the coolest thing.
It's got a convertible top, though. The whole thing folds down.
That's awesome. That the doors awesome. Coming off, I think, is such a unique piece to the truck. And it's such a cool selling feature. I think that's why they're in the television commercials, that they're pushing it so hard, because you can take you can do so much. You even pull the windshield down on it and actually treat
it
like
a
Jeep.
It makes the coolest truck on the planet. I mean, Jeeps have always done that. But a trucks, no, they've never done that.
Yeah, I mean, just it's very, very cool. All right, Eileen, can you do a review? Do you want a review, or do you want to go hop on a plane?
So you've got 5 minutes of me before they start calling my boarding group. So let's go ahead and do the review.
All right.
Okay.
What are you
go
driving?
Go ahead.
All right. So this week I was in the BMW 330i. Beautiful little blue sports car. Drove it all around Houston. Drove it back and forth to Dallas. It was a fun little car. No, not so bad before the M2, of course, because it's a little bit more fun. But in terms of a 3 Series, it's a great little car. It has a 2-liter inline 4-cylinder, 255 horsepower, 295 pound-feet of torque. It was a solid entry-level kind of 3 Series vehicle. I was very comfortable in it, which was surprising. I haven't been comfortable in BMW vehicles recently, so that was a nice surprise. It was fuel efficient. I had a lot of range in it, which was nice. Materials are a little bit less high quality than I would expect out of a BMW. Honestly, if I'm paying $55,000, $50,000 for a car, I expect to have a little bit better quality. But good fit and finish, nonetheless, which we expect from BMW. It was in a great blue color. That was nice.
It was a pretty car.
Yeah, it was a pretty car, and it was a nice vehicle. Now, would I go with the 5 Series or would I go with the 2 Series instead? Probably. And I say that because mainly, for me as a driver, I didn't have a lot of space. I didn't have enough space to get comfortable on the road. You know, like when you're driving and you've got on cruise control and you put your knee up, your left knee up, I didn't have a lot of space there. So I was kind of, that was the part that I was like, well, I kind of would want a bigger vehicle. But in terms of tooling around every day, daily driver, 3 Series is a really solid bet.
There you go. That's pretty easy.
Very cool. Eileen, thank you. Fly safe. We will see you soon, I'm sure, and we'll talk next week on the show with you.
All right, thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
That is Eileen Falkenberg-Hall coming to you from Louisville doing an automobile review from an airport. That's a first, Mike, for us on the show.
It is.
Very cool.
Why not? Okay.
So let's get to your review next, Mike. Well, what were you in this week?
Mine was actually for the 2 weeks I've been driving Jeep Gladiators. But the first week, which is what I'm going to talk about now, I drove the Overland model. And that's the 4x4. Obviously, they're all 4x4s. But this is the Overland, which is the fancy one. Now, this one has a base price of $40,395. This is a midsize truck, folks. But it's not a truck. I mean, it's hard to explain. Does somebody that drives an F-150 or a Ram or 1500 really going to buy this? Probably, I don't know that it appeals to them. But somebody that drives a Jeep or a Bronco or something like that, or Land Rover, that wants kind of a truck side of it, it's really great because it'll tow like 7,600 pounds. It'll put 1,600 pounds in the bed. It's got a beefed up frame. It's got, you know, it's got, I think, a modified Ram 1500 frame. It's got the 8-speed transmission. It has the V6. Now, I drove one with a 4-cylinder and it ran great. I never believed the 4-cylinder runs so darn good. I mean, it's a turbo 4 and it runs great. It had stop start, but it had also the mild hybrid. And so that was the e-torque system. And it's easy to get 23, 24 miles a gallon on it. This one is 21 city, but I end up getting about 22 miles per gallon on the highway. And around town and highway, probably around town, and I drove it like Matt Peralt. So in other words, I drove it like I stole it. I'm getting 19.9 miles per gallon between 19.9 and 20.1. You know, if you ask somebody that owns a Jeep, they go, I get 20 miles a gallon more. They said, absolutely not, only if you're going downhill. But this is an awesome vehicle. It's quiet inside. Now, the one I had the big convertible top. So it goes right above the driver. You push the button, and it'll go all the way back and fold down. Then, like you said, pull the doors off. It's just a few minutes to pull the doors. I'll unplug, pull the pins out. The doors are off. You can fold the windshield down, and you've got a truck that is not comparable to anything. It's so different. You know, who makes a convertible truck but Jeep? And who makes a truck that'll go up the side of a mountain? Jeep. It's amazing. Now, you know, it's funny. These things come standard with a manual transmission. But this one had the optional 8-speed, which I think is really the best deal at all, because it really has it. It's got big Dana 44 axles. It's got huge axles. It's got skid plates. It's got, this one here had the upgraded leather trim bucket seats for the nice interior, had the customer preferred package with the trailer tow package, the receiver hitch, and it's got the zoom up camera to see everything, heavy duty cooling system, big alternator. So in other words, you can pull a camper and it'll charge the battery in your camper. This kind of stuff had the cold weather group with the heated front seats and heated steering wheel, which is, you know, doesn't seem like it's that important, but you being from up north, northeast, you know how important that kind of stuff is.
Yeah.
Remote start. I kind of like that. I'm just lazy because it's so hot outside. I get choked up just thinking about how hot it is. But it's so hot outside. To be able to start it for 5 minutes before you walk out there is really neat. It had all the LED headlights and fog lamps and all that good stuff. It had the 8.4-inch Uconnect infotainment system with Apple CarPlay and all that, and Android Auto. Has all that. Had the premium auto system from Alpine. All that stuff. So it ends up with all the other goodies, the active safety group with has its parking assist system, blind spot monitoring, which is really kind of handy, forward collision warning plus that, and it has adaptive cruise control, which was really nice on the highway, although this isn't really that much of a highway vehicle, but it has great manners. It handles really well. It's quiet. This one had the bigger wheels and tires than the one I'm driving now. It's got all the thick slush mats, and it's got the three-piece hard top, and it also came with a convertible top, so it comes with two tops. Rear window defroster, and that's just spray in bed liner, the whole bit, all this good stuff, and the destination charge end up to be $57,230. And people are going to, like you said, they're lining up to buy it. They're lining up to accessorize it. I can't imagine what SEMA is going to be like. I mean, half of SEMA could be the Gladiator, how they're going to accessorize it. This is just like you know, everybody's idea, I mean, of a fantasy vehicle. This is exactly what people have been asking for years and years and years. And they did it because they didn't want another midsize pickup truck. They wanted a Jeep that had a pickup bed on it. That's what they wanted. And
right.
This is a pickup truck that's more capable than any other pickup truck on the planet Earth. So I don't know that you could beat it. It's been a great vehicle. Next week, I'm going to talk about the cheaper version of it, the one that starts in the 30s. We're going to talk about that version that I almost like better. So for what I was using it for out in the country, it was actually better than the Overland fancy one. This is a more, you could take this to dinner, you know, date night out to the opera kind of thing, which is really kind of cool. Or the other one was more of a, let's take it out and beat the hell out of it. So it was great cars.
All right, thanks, Mike. I was driving a Mazda CX-9, a 2019 SUV that I am going to tell you at the top that I was pretty impressed and actually was pretty surprised at how much I liked the vehicle. And look, Mazda done a great job over the last couple of years of really upping the ante, really, you know, making their vehicles drive a lot more smoothly, a lot more of a luxurious feel. And look, this is a vehicle with a sticker price of $47,000, but I mean, I almost felt like it was worth it. I know you might go, wait, $47,000 for a Mazda, but no, it's really impressive. The vehicle, the engine was phenomenal. A 2.5 turbo engine that really was smooth, 227 horsepower, never felt like it was lagging, never felt like I needed more. When I hit it, it went. Now, there's a sport mode, so clearly I was driving in sport mode, but it was a lot of fun. And the interior was extremely luxurious. I mean, the Napa leather trim upholstery was really nice. You know, you had heated front seats, which is great. You had, you know, a very comfortable steering wheel. The heads-up display was huge and really, really good. And I liked the way it was positioned. I liked the information that was on it. And then you get the safety features that come with Mazda, which they're always great with their safety features with rear cross-traffic awareness, blind spot detection, side airbags, lane departure warnings, keep lane assist. It helps you park. I mean, it's got a lot of really cool things on it. And I mean, this was a vehicle that is very safe overall, a 5-star rating. It had a third row. Now, the second row moves, which is nice, right? You know, the second row, you kind of pop it up and you move it forward, get some more space for those people in the third row, which is nice because the third row is not needed. This is another vehicle that says, okay, somebody wants, you know, to have like their dogs back there or something. That's all they can really fit. But that's kind of their thought process of, all right, well, let's give them the option if they want it. So I get why they did it. Not really in love with it, but fine. You know, it's nice you can move the second row seats forwards and backwards when you need it. A couple other things I like. I mean, clearly, I really do like push-button trunks. That's very easy. Open and close power trunks are phenomenal in SUVs. I always get a great usage of those. And then, you know, when you look at the vehicle, how it appears is really nice. I mean, I really like the lines. This was a really nice color. They called it machine gray metallic, but it really stood out. Really nice wheels, 20-inch alloy wheels, which is really nice. You got your moon roof, which is cool. You know, some privacy glass and tint on the window with the gray looked really sharp. So, I mean, I think if you're in the market for a bigger SUV, maybe not a full size, like the biggest available, but if you just want an SUV that's large, gets pretty decent gas mileage. I got about 24 miles per gallon on average and has some really nice trims you can upgrade to if you want. You don't have to get all the bells and whistles, but if you do, it almost feels like you can go, you know what? You almost justify a Mazda at this price. It's a really nice vehicle. Definitely check it out. The 2019 Mazda CX-9. Really, really recommend it for anybody looking for a kind of a bigger size SUV. All right, let's hear some interviews from Mike Herzing here on Let's Talk Wheels.
You know, guys, everything is crazy around here when it comes to a hurricane. I'm in Houston, Texas, and folks, we're at a Hurricaneville everywhere, okay? But everything changes. A lot of laws change, a lot of practices change and things like that. And the folks that help us here in Texas are the Texas Department of Public Safety. That's the trooper, the black and white, the guys that pull you over, but they also help you a lot. And we owe them a lot because they keep us safe. We have Richard Standifer. He's one of the communications guys and a trooper with the Texas Department of Public Safety. He's going to tell us a little about some evacuation practices they have and things like that. Richard, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
I am doing great. Now, you know, we just had some storms over on the East Coast and things like that, and we've been through. I've been through a lot of storms, including Hurricane Carla way back in the '60s here in Texas. And everything gets a little crazy, but you guys have a way of making it work. Whenever we need to evacuate, stuff like that, what are some of the things that you guys do to help folks get out of town?
So typically what we do is on our freeway infrastructure system, you have a way in and a way out.
Right.
So when the threat is coming from the Gulf, we try to push out the information as early as possible.
Okay.
And then at some point, we're going to shut down the way into the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to open up all 4, 5, 6 lanes of traffic outward.
Okay.
This came about because of a hurricane some years back. I believe it was Alicia.
Yep.
There were several hundred thousand folks on I-45. Some deaths occurred because the lanes inbound were empty and the lanes outbound were full.
Right.
So because of that, they changed it. Now all lanes inbound or outbound will be headed outbound based on where the threat is coming from.
Wow. I mean, that's really, I hate to say it, that's smart. What a great idea.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea. And how you'll be able to identify that is when you're tooling up and down the roads,
right,
you will see a hurricane logo. So when you see that hurricane logo, that is a contraflow highway. So if it gets bad enough, at some point, a trooper will be there to block off the entrances to prevent folks from going into the city.
Right.
And then we'll all be directing them out of the city.
I think that's probably something that I know the state of Texas does. But do you think other states do that too?
I don't know. If I had to guess, I would hope that they would have some type of system in play. But here's the thing. We are a coastal state, so they have it here. I can't guarantee that all of the other states, I'd imagine they have something in California like that or something in Florida like that, and maybe in even Louisiana because it's a coastal state.
Right.
But up north, I doubt it. Your threat changes when you get up around the top portion of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. They're known for tornadoes, not so much hurricanes.
Right.
But you could have a hurricane to come off of the Gulf and go all the way up to Lubbock. That's not unheard of.
Well, you know, you're right, and a lot of things change, and you guys are just always right in the middle of it. It seems like funny. Whenever there's really stuff, tough stuff going on, you guys actually have to step up and help us. And you guys, I mean, y'all will block off all the entrances for the inbound, right?
Correct.
And everybody's outbound. Wow, what a great idea.
Correct.
I know that has worked before. Okay, are there anything else like you do, like high water crossings or any of that other stuff? I know West Texas, or even here in Houston, golly, I remember people going to the underpass and they never realize how deep it is and they end up drowning.
Exactly.
There's a lot of states where that happen, where you get so much rain in such a short period. It's not any different than the snow states where the snow is deeper than everybody thinks either, or the ice over the water. Now, what do you guys do around those kind of water crossings and things like that?
So we tell folks, and you've heard this before, and it sounds cliche, turn around, don't drown. That is a valid statement. So a foot of moving water can take a vehicle.
Really?
So there's a big difference between water that's still and water that's moving. If it's moving, please, please, please don't drive in it. It'll take your vehicle. Most people don't realize all the water has to do is get high enough to get into the exhaust, and your motor's off.
Yeah, you're right.
You're dead in the water, so you don't know how deep it is. Another great idea that's been born from that is in the Houston area, they have these, they're yard, it's like a yardstick, but it's used to measure the height of the water.
Right, it's a rain gauge.
So the average person can come by and see how deep the water is, granted if they can read the gauge. That's a great idea. Unfortunately, we had a HPD officer. He was killed in the line of duty. He drowned in the event of Hurricane Harvey while he was traveling along the roadways.
I mean, guys, I mean, it just floods and it rains so much. There's no way the roads can get rid of everything. And
correct.
It seems like in parts of like Houston, for example, they use the roads almost like to get the water out because the roads are sometimes lower than everything around it.
Correct.
And that's a great idea in a way, but you got to keep the cars off the road. So do you guys actually pull people over and just say, hey, please don't do that, or you stop them? How does that work? I know it's a delicate situation.
So typically what we'll do, if we notice a long, unknown flood area, we'll block the entrance. And when the people come up, we'll just say, hey, how you doing, Texas Highway Patrol? We just want to let you know we're blocking this for the safety of the citizens. It's too dangerous for you to pass. So we don't necessarily pull them over per se. But we'll just block that known bad area, and that prevents them from going into that environment.
you know, something on a little bit different subject, but I sometimes will go on the freeway and I'll see somebody stalled. And if you've got somebody stalled on the inside lane, how in the heck do you get them to the outside lane? Or do you follow them, you come up behind them and turn on your lights and try to protect them? How does a trooper handle something like that?
We do. So typically we like to see folks pull up on the right-hand side of the shoulder. That way we can get them off. But if they're on an inside lane, I'll bring my unit up behind them. I'll back it up maybe 15 to 20 feet, turn the lights on, then I'll go up to make contact with them. At that point, I'll try to determine what kind of mechanical issues that they're having. If it's something minor, i.e. the car is out of gas, the battery needs to be jumped. It just depends. I have a pair of jumper cables that are fairly long. Some troopers have a jump box that's totally remote so they can get the individual started. If it requires mechanical attention, we'll call a tow truck on scene. And then I can back my vehicle up even further, and then we can safely get them off of the inside lane by stopping traffic and letting them get to the shoulder of the roadway.
I mean, I've seen troopers, not just in Texas, but all over, that will see somebody with a flat tire, and they'll end up having to help them change the tire. I mean, not only do they block off so they don't get run over, but I've seen troopers actually get down there and actually help them change the tire or do it themselves.
Most definitely.
A nice gesture. And what a nice thing for the public.
Yeah, well, they actually outfit some of us with jack stands and four-way lug wrenches because most vehicles are made with a specific lug wrench to fit that vehicle. So when you have a universal four wrench, you're able to accommodate different types of vehicles. And I've seen some folks where we actually change the spare tire. We put the tire on the ground, it's flat. So some of these guys, they'll have a mini compressor on board to try to accommodate. We do as much as we can. We carry a little bit of water with us. They won't let us carry fuel because of the concerns of the vapors and what have you.
Yeah, you don't want
but
to
we can
run.
Take them to go get some fuel if they run out of gas. We've had a large fresh show of folks, they run out of gas on the side of the road as well.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes people just don't pay attention. I mean, they're just still in their own little world and we're all too busy, you know. It's just like we always find each other going too fast or kind of getting. What do you do with road rage? I mean, you see somebody going crazy, somebody will call 911 and say, there's somebody over here, there's a road rage incident. How would you guys approach something like that? I know we're getting off topic, but it's just you're so good at this.
So typically when there's a road rage event, when we show up on scene in a marked unit, it tends to disappear fairly quickly unless they're so focused on it they don't pay attention to us.
Right.
But when a road rage incident manifests itself in a violation of the law, we have a legal presence to go ahead and intervene and make a traffic stop on that.
Okay. Now, also, I know it's a big problem with distracted driving and drowsy driving. I was reading something
Correct.
The other day about drowsy driving being
Correct.
As bad as if you've only had less than 4 hours of sleep, which some people do. It's
Correct.
The same as being drunk. Have you guys run across that before?
We do. I've worked a few crashes when I was a young troop early in my career. They fell asleep and hit the guardrail, and the guardrail went under the truck, came through the floorboard, and severed an individual's leg. So that is a real thing. It's not against the law to be drowsy, but it has the same characteristics of being intoxicated or drunk, if you will.
Isn't that a shame? I mean, it's just
it
so
is.
That. And now we've got these people. You see on the news about the guys with the Tesla autopilot, and they think that's a reason to go to sleep. I mean, what would you do if you pulled up next to somebody and you saw that? I mean, can you imagine it?
It would be hard for me to picture that. I guess I'm what you would refer to as old school. I like to be in control of the vehicle.
Yeah.
So to see a vehicle operating itself. And nobody is on the controls, I would be kind of stumped just a little bit. I'd be concerned as well for their safety because technology is a wonderful thing, but it ages just like everything else does.
Oh, I know.
God forbid there's an issue with the technology that causes somebody to be seriously injured.
Well, you're no kidding, and I know that there's a lot of this new technology and autonomous vehicles and things like that.
Most
it's all
definitely.
Coming up. And I hear that they're doing some autonomous vehicle runs between San Antonio and Houston on some
yes,
big
sir.
Trucks. And granted, it's
yes,
only a straight shot, and they one exit, and then they're at whatever they need to go. And I think right now they have at least a human driver in there just in case. But, gosh, I mean, is this a whole new set of laws that you guys got to go by now?
Well, I would imagine due to the new technology, it may need to be policed by some new laws. We don't have anything on the books as of yet because that's not totally in existence as of yet. It's not something that's used on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's just testing it right now, but I mean, it's kind
right.
of, wow, Richard, it's Trooper, it's actually coming. You know, it's kind
oh,
of crazy,
yeah. oh,
but
yeah.
it's coming.
And then that's not the only folks. You have some of these grocery stores that are using the same type of technology to make deliveries for the merchandise to the residents.
Yeah, I would imagine you'd end up with some almost road rage in there because people have a tendency to get going faster than the speed limit. Granted, Texas speed limits are pretty darn high, and they're pretty darn good. If you ask me, if you want to get, because it's such a big state, we got to get across there.
Correct.
But some of these guys, I mean, some of the biggest problems I run into in road rage, not even that, just crazy things, is the speed limit is 75 and some guy's doing 50 or 55.
Yeah.
Do you ever run across the people not making the minimum speed? Or do you guys just kind of pull them over and say, hey, guys, by the way, you need to go a little bit more than this so you don't get hurt?
Yeah, that could be construed as impeding traffic, and there's a law against impeding traffic. So the way it's supposed to work is you have, let's say you have three lanes. The inside lane is going to be able to go to posted speed limit. The middle lane is going to be able to go to posted speed limit. That right lane is for anybody who's going slower than that. And I've had some instances where some folks were going slower than the posted speed limit. But, you know, there is a law in the books that says that you can't impede on traffic on a public roadway. So it may be more of an advantage for you to be on the frontage road or the service road, as you would refer to it as, to not impede on somebody else's ability to go to posted speed limit on the freeway.
Well, no kidding. And there are some people out there that think they want to go in the fast lane because Texas is starting. I mean, other states have done this for years. Texas has finally said, hey, the left lane is for passing. Otherwise, go in the right lane. And people don't seem to know that in Texas. We're pretty hard-headed. And that makes me crazy sometimes. But you've got somebody that will actually think they're going to be a police officer, and they're going to go in there in the left lane and slow everybody down. And all that does is cause more problems than anything else. I mean,
that's a perfect pretext to road rage, actually.
It is, really? Because everybody wants to, they want to police something. It seems like, it's somebody in the Prius or something, you know, but it's just kind of crazy. I mean, other states don't seem to have that problem. But Texas, we've never really enforced that, and I guess that's maybe some of the deal, and you guys are just too nice to say anything sometimes.
Well, we try to remain to be professional, so that's something that DPS looks favorably on. So we try to maintain a professional standard and not try to degrade anybody on the roadway.
Well, sure. I mean, a lot of you guys are out there at night. You're out on the middle of the road in the middle of nowhere, and you're by yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of scary, if you ask me. I mean, whatever they pay you guys is not enough because this is a big state. And this is not the only state like that. You can go to Arizona, you can go to Nevada and all that stuff, and those poor troopers are out there in the middle of nowhere.
Most definitely.
And, wow, that's kind of crazy. So thank you for what you do, that's for sure. Now, do you guys have a website where it has some kind of tips about driving and things like that and these kind of hurricane evacuations?
We do. You can go to the DPS website, and you can type in either new traffic laws or driving tips or tips to get a driver's license. And all that information is there. So they've had a laundry list of new laws that have come out.
Mm-hmm.
One most importantly is they're doing away with the Texas driver point system, so they could get some information on that as well.
Well, there you go. I haven't had a ticket in so long, I haven't even had to worry about that.
Oh, that's great.
Trooper Standifer, thanks for joining Let's Talk Wheels today.
All right, sir. Don't forget to buckle up, be safe, and please don't drink and drive.
I will not. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, now for our Texas listeners, we have a really cool event. We have Carolyn Alvey, and she's from the Park Place dealership. Now, if you're around Texas, you're going to hear about the Park Place dealers. They have all the luxury cars. And they've got an event coming up called the Luxury Supercar Showcase. And we've got Carolyn on the line. And Carolyn, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels, and let's talk about what you're doing.
Hi, thank you for having me. Oh, yes, we have quite an extraordinary event. This is our third annual.
Mm-hmm.
It is a charitable event,
ooh,
and this year the event benefits Baylor Scott & White Irving Foundation. So we're proud to be supporting our community, local hospital. But the event is a lifestyle event, and it returns to the Four Seasons Resort and Club at Las Colinas.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is for the guys and the ladies that just love luxury cars that are probably very high-end, very cool.
You
guys have the dealership that covers that whole thing. You don't even sell regular cars, do you?
Well, we sell cars for everybody. So
there you
go. We sell new cars. We sell pre-owned cars. We have cars for anybody. But Park Place is known as a luxury automotive group and does represent Rolls-Royce and Maserati and McLaren and Bentley. We've added just recently Karma to our lineup of vehicles. We also have Porsche, Mercedes-Benz, Lexus, Volvo, Jaguar, and Land Rover.
I don't think there's any of them that you don't sell.
Well, now you have note.
Unless they come up with something, then you'll take it.
Right.
Now, where are your dealerships located?
So we are all throughout Texas. We have dealerships that are in Dallas and mm-hmm. Fort Worth and in the suburbs in between those cities in what we call Northeast Tarrant County.
Right.
We have a McLaren dealership in Houston. And in the first quarter of 2020, we're going to be introducing a Jaguar Land Rover dealership in Austin.
I noticed how you called it Jaguar, because that's what the guys that work there talk about.
Absolutely.
And so, but in Texas, you know, if somebody comes up and wants to buy one, you'll let them pronounce it any way they want, right?
We will. And, you know, Porsche enthusiasts are always very sticklers about the Porsche name, but we don't necessarily make a sour face when somebody calls it Porsche.
That's right. They can call it whatever they want if they own it. Tell you what. Okay,
right.
Carolyn, and you guys got this thing going on. You've done this for 3 years now?
This will be our third year, and the event is centered around automotive, of mm-hmm. course. And so we have three very specific areas of vehicles that will be on display.
Okay.
We have what we call the Part Place New Car Concours, and that okay. features all the brands I just ran through. Then we also have, which is probably one of the most exciting areas, is the Collector's Concours.
Oh, yes.
And this is a juried showcase mm-hmm. of rare, classic, luxury, and supercars from private collectors.
Mm-hmm.
And those are going to be on the display on the first fairway of the golf course at the Four Seasons. And on that, some of the cars you're going to see are like a 1916 Stutz Bearcat.
Okay.
You'll see a 1956 Mercedes-Benz 190 SL. And then you'll see things like a 1966 Shelby GT350H Hertz Rent-A-Racer, which is pretty extraordinary to see in person.
I remember those. I remember those years ago as a kid, and they were like, you can go and rent practically a Shelby race car almost, and you were like, from Hertz. And they did that for a while, several years.
Right.
And it was, I don't know if it ever made them any money. It sure got them a lot of notoriety, but I don't know if it ever made money off of it.
Exactly.
It was like, I can go to the rental place and just pick up a supercar at that time. And it was just really such a cool thing to do. So you guys are all across Texas. And people,
right.
I'm sure, come in from all the adjoining states or even from across the nation for this event.
Yes. Yes, and we actually have a third component, which is the mm-hmm. Car Club Expo, and that'll be on the 18th fairway of the Four Seasons. We'll have the Mercedes-Benz Club of America, the Lamborghini Club of Dallas. We'll have the Porsche Club of America, the Maverick region. We'll have the Corvette Legends of Texas, McLaren Club, Jaguar owners. And then we have the Shelby North Texas Car Club, as well as the Ferrari Car Club. So we have people that are coming all over from North Texas and all throughout Texas, but also we get people coming from Oklahoma and Arkansas and even some from New Mexico.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so this thing has been around. What kind of attendance are you expecting? I mean, you're going to spend 100 people, 200, 1,000? What are we going to see?
We're going to see approximately 5,000 people attend. Last
okay.
year, if anybody was in the state of Texas, knows that we had torrential rains in Dallas
yep.
in September. Every weekend, some huge event was getting rained out.
Yes.
And ours, we do rain or shine. Now, we didn't know if we were going to be the only people showed up, but quite honestly, it was shocking and pleasantly, surprisingly, to see 3,000 people came last year in
wow.
the rain.
Wow.
So this year we're expecting great sunshine. It's supposed to be beautiful. The temperatures are supposed to be mild for Texas. We'll be in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
and we're expecting about 5,000 people.
Well, you know, North Texas like that doesn't have the humidity that we have down here in Houston, so it's not quite as uncomfortable, especially once the sun goes down. It's really not bad enough. So we're going to go. Now, if somebody's interested in attending this, what are they doing? How can they find out more information about it?
So they can go to the website, which is luxurysupercarshowcase.com. And on there, they can see all the elements of the event. They can also purchase tickets. I will say it is advantageous to purchase tickets ahead of time because they'll be cheaper online, and at the gate the price of admission goes up.
Uh-huh.
The tickets start at $25 and they go up to $100, which is a VIP ticket and also allows for the owner of that ticket to have wonderful food and beverage tastings from more than 20 restaurants that are the high-end luxury restaurants here in Dallas. But if people don't want to buy the VIP ticket, they also will have access to some amazing food trucks. So we have some great food trucks that'll be on site, and you know, everything from pizzeria to tacos to ice cream to just a great grill, Fast Furious Grill will be there. So we have something for everybody from a food standpoint, but we'll also have the Lexus Live Stage for live music, and we'll have the Mercedes-Benz Beer Garden, which will have some nice tastings there. And we also, for the ladies, we have fashion. We have a great partner in Highland Park Village who's going to be presenting a fully produced runway fashion show. And immediately following that, we're going to have a hot hat contest. So we're asking the ladies and the gentlemen who attend to wear their best hats, and there are prizes for each winner. So we have a little something for everything. Of course, don't forget the kids.
Yeah.
Because the kids, we love to teach children from a very young age about car etiquette, and we love to teach them about, you know, how to approach a private collector, about seeing the car and enjoying the car and answering and asking questions about the car. But we also want kids to come and have fun, so we have an entire kids zone, even with a 60-foot Hot Wheels track set up.
Well, there you go. I mean, now, this is an event is obviously at a resort. Are there rooms available at the resort at the same time?
So there are rooms in throughout the city of Irving, has some amazing hotels.
It's a nice place. And
yeah, it's just, it's a beautiful place to be. And so there are quite a few hotels that are offering discounts for people who are coming in for the event. All they need to do is mention that they're coming in for the Park Place Luxury and Supercar Showcase, and they will get the promo.
Well, awesome. We're going to be sure to check that. The date on this is September?
Yes, September 28th, and it's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and it's rain or shine.
Okay, that's luxurysupercarshowcase.com, correct?
That is correct.
All right, Carolyn Alvey and Park Place Dealerships, thank you so much for joining Let's Talk Wheels today.
Thank you for having me, and I hope everybody comes to see us.
It's going to be fun, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Sunshine's going to be out, I guarantee it.
All right, thank you.